The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Dedicating so much of her time, effort, and energy to our community, Mr. Speaker, I ask for waiver of notice and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? All those in favor say aye. All those against say nay. Motion is carried. Orders of the day, oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 2:44. We will finish at 3:44. I will now recognize the honourable member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, on April 21st, 2011, 1 year ago, when asked about funding cuts, the Minister of Education stood in this House and said, and I quote, "I trust that the impact will not be felt by students in the classroom," end of quote. Mr. Speaker, a year has passed, and boards have seen another round of this government's short-sighted budget cuts. Students, parents, and teachers are feeling the impact, and it's not positive. They are concerned again about the future impacts this will have on public education. The evidence can be found in every board across this province, Mr. Speaker, if the minister wanted to look. So my question to the minister is this: how can the minister defend the statement she made in the House on April 2011, knowing that her government's cuts are having a negative impact in the classroom?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We are making sure that the funding is appropriate for the students in this province. The ratio is 12.9 to 1. We've increased funding per student. We are meeting the needs of our students in the province of Nova Scotia. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North. On her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. School boards are starting now to approve their budgets and to announce the negative effect that this government's cuts are having on education. In particular, Chignecto Central Regional School Board has announced that it will lay off all librarians and library technicians in every school in that board. Libraries are the hub of learning and the research in schools. They are essential in fostering independent learning, in literacy, and in preparation for post-secondary education. Boards are forced to eliminate library services in order to respond to this government's short-sighted budget reductions. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is this: will the minister stand on her feet in this House today and tell the students in Chignecto Central Regional School Board that she will restore funding to the board to ensure that their libraries are protected?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. You know, it was an extremely disappointing to hear what Chignecto has decided to do. And as I understand, there's been no final decisions. The HOG formula very clearly does allocate appropriate funding to their board for library services. This government stands behind supporting our libraries, and we do that through our formula. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Disappointment is putting it mildly when you talk to parents and teachers and students in Chignecto Central and other boards around the province. Mr. Speaker, The students at Colby Quid Education Center, one of the largest schools, the high schools in the province, are concerned about the library in their school. They know the value of their library, their librarians, and the opportunities that library provides. They know that these decisions were forced on the board by the NDP government. Mr. Speaker, those students get it. Once again, they're questioning the minister's decision. She failed to stand up for students during last year's budget decisions. She's failed again to stand up for students during this year's budget decisions. Mr. Speaker, those students are planning to walk out tomorrow in protest of losing this valuable resource. So my question to the minister is this. She has time, if she's interested in supporting students, to stand up now for the students of Colby Quid Education Centre and other high schools in Chignecto Central and give the money that they need to keep their library open.
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I would like to repeat that we are making sure that we're funding school boards appropriately, and through the HOG formula, there is a line there for support of the libraries. They have $3.8 million in their budget line in Chignecto for their libraries. This is a decision that the school board is making, and I would like to have an explanation from the school board on how they are going to ensure that the students of Chignecto have library services next year. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, just before the holiday weekend, 41 librarians of the Chignecto Central Regional School Board found out they would be out of a job, every single one of them. My question is for the Premier. This is proof that the cuts imposed by the Premier's government are, in fact, being felt at the frontline level of service, a service valued by all Nova Scotians and certainly by those students and parents in the Chignecto Central region. It is a sacrifice, Mr. Speaker, that is sadly not felt by the Premier's own Minister of Finance, who finished last year with a forecast 216 employees in his own department, but in his budget is going to fund 257 full-time employees in the coming year, an increase of, guess what, the same number of 41. And so my question to the Premier is, why is 41 new funded positions in finance more important than 41 librarians at Chignecto Central Regional School Board?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, let me be really clear. Any board that says that it's going to cut the entire library service from their budget cannot be taken seriously. And I think it's an abrogation. It's an abrogation of their responsibility to the children in their charge. And I want to be, like I said, very, very clear that this is nothing but a political game being played by the school board. They are funded for those positions. And if they don't use the money for that funding, then maybe they just don't want the funding.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, any premier that stands by and watches 41 librarians fired while 41 more bureaucrats are going to be added at finance does not deserve to be taken seriously either, Mr. Speaker. And it doesn't stop at finance. The Department of Education finished the most recent year with 177 full-time people in the forecast for the year just ended, but has a budget for 194 in the upcoming year, an increase of 17. So I'll ask the Premier again if he wants to be taken seriously. Why is 17 more bureaucrats at the Department of Education okay while firing 41 librarians at Chignecto Central School Board has to happen? Which is his real priority? More in Halifax and less in Chignecto, or the other way around?
Honourable the Premier.
Unfortunately, the Leader of the Conservative Party wrote that question before he heard my first answer, because the simple fact of the matter is they know that the school board knows to the families and children that they are supposed to serve that those cuts would be unacceptable. They are unacceptable to them, they are unacceptable to the community, and they are unacceptable to us, Mr. Speaker. Be assured.
Yeah. The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, what is unacceptable to the people of Chignecto Central Regional School Board, the parents and the students, in fact all Nova Scotians, is that they have a government that is adding 553 new full-time equivalent positions at the centre of government while watching 41 librarians, and multiply that across the province, being cut at the school board level. If he truly wants his own answers to be taken seriously, will he explain to all those parents and all those students why those cuts have to happen while he adds more bureaucrats at the department level, like finance, like education, in Halifax?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, not only has the Chignecto School Board been playing games, but obviously he wants to participate in this as well. He knows that there are hundreds less employees on the rolls of the provincial government now than there was. He knows that in fact we have all shared in the restraint that's necessary in order to get the province back to balance and to deal with the hundreds of millions of dollars, no, billions of dollars of deficit left behind by the Conservative government.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Speaker, this NDP government has attacked our public education system by slashing more than $60 million from the budget. Mr. Speaker, in 2003, the Premier said, and I quote, "This is the NDP's key commitment, to ensure that every student receives the individual attention they need in the classroom," end of quote. We now have fewer teachers, fewer teacher assistants, larger class sizes, Mr. Speaker, and this government has made it impossible to ensure that every student receives the attention he or she may need. So my question to the Premier, how can you reconcile these statements in the past with your current action that are costing students essential services and additional support?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, contrary to what the Leader of the Official Opposition says, the per capita funding for students is going to be at its highest level in our history, and the student-teacher ratio is going to be at its lowest.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, and the bureaucracy in the Department of Education is going to be at an all-time high as well, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, members of the Premier's party have also extensively warned about education cuts. Mr. Speaker, on May 9, 2000, the now Minister of Transportation tabled a petition that he personally signed on behalf of the residents of Inverness. The petition declared, and I quote, "We, the undersigned, protest a reduction in the public education budget recently announced by the Minister of Finance. These cuts will have a devastating impact on our province and our students," end of quote. This government has made more than $60 million, Mr. Speaker, cuts in public education over the last 2 years. My question to the Premier, how can the NDP government defend more than $60 million in education cuts today when they were so opposed to them in 2000?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as I pointed out, and as pointed out numerous times, there are 300 more teachers in the system today than there was 10 years ago when there were 10,000 more students, Mr. Speaker. We have the highest individual per student rate of funding in our history. We have the lowest student-teacher ratio in decades, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this government argues that they are merely basing education funding on enrollment and the number of students. But, Mr. Speaker, on March 6, 2002, the now Deputy Premier wrote an op-ed in response to Jane Purvis's comments that dollars must follow the students. Mr. Speaker wrote, and I quote, "In a time of economic transition, our survival will depend on vision, knowledge, and skill. It will require an education system that will equip the next generation with these tools, not a crude per capita-based funding formula that will lead us to educational discrimination," end of quote. So my question to the Premier, why is his government pursuing a funding approach that the Deputy Premier called crude? crude, and discriminatory.
Honorable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I just want to apologize to the Leader of the Opposition because I made a mistake in the answer to the last question. I said we had 10,000 less students than we had a decade ago. We have 30,000 less students than we had a decade ago. 300 more teachers. Highest per capita funding in our history and among the lowest student-teacher ratio in decades.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on a new question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it's clear that public education is not a priority for this government. We have fewer teacher assistants, Mr. Speaker, growing class sizes. During a March 26, 2008 presentation to the Halifax Regional School Board, the now Health Minister said, and I quote, "When I imagine the schools and the community I am so lucky to live in, I don't imagine fewer teachers, larger class sizes, and bigger caseloads or longer wait times for specialized staff." End of quote. We now have fewer teachers, larger class sizes, bigger caseloads, and longer wait times for specialized staff. So I question the Premier, if the NDP couldn't imagine such an education system in 2008, why is his government creating this kind of system today?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, we're not, Mr. Speaker. In fact, we're making investments in education that are going to improve the opportunities for our students. That's why we have a new skilled trades high school going into Cole Harbour. It's why we've put money into ensuring that exactly the services that the Minister of Health talked about are available for students. It is why we are ensuring that the per capita funding for students continues to rise. It is why we are continuing to ensure that the number of teachers number of students per teacher continues to go down.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, to the point, why did you raise the cap size, Mr. Speaker? It not only, Mr. Speaker, are the diversity of the classroom much different than it was in 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, when all of these statements were made, Mr. Speaker. He is adding new programs at the same time he's cutting funding, Mr. Speaker. This government, the Premier is quick to not accept responsibility for his actions, but blame school boards, Mr. Speaker. And I want to quote the member from Cole Harbour Eastern Passage in 2005, Mr. Speaker, and the quote is, "They, the school board, are not holding us hostage. The province is," end of quote. So my question for the Premier, in 2005, the NDP said the school board should not take the blame for impacts on the province's education cuts. What has changed?
Yeah. Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, last year we saw the Central Chignecto School Board come forward with all kinds of, you know, dire predictions about what were going to happen and how many school teachers were going to be lost. And you know what, Mr. Speaker? Didn't happen. Of course it didn't happen. And it didn't happen because this is simply a game being played by that school board. And I say by that school board. And we're going to make sure that the kids who rely on the services, whether they are of librarians or other services, or that adult learners who need adult education in that board are going to get the services they need.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, are those communities that are opposing school closures playing a game, the decision made by this government, Mr. Speaker? Are there parents across this province who are having to suffer the devastating educational cuts playing a game, Mr. Speaker? Let's be clear. There's only one government, there's only one place where a check is written in this province for public education, and is squarely at the feet of the Premier of this province, Mr. Speaker. It is the Premier of this province who is taking $60 million out of public education and asking school boards to deliver more with less, Mr. Speaker. That's the game we're playing in this place, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in 2001, in a Chronicle Herald op-ed about government cuts, the now Finance Minister said, and I quote, "Are they going to cut services to the sick, the young, and the poor?" End of quote. This government, Mr. Speaker, as I've said many times, has cut $60 million out of public education in the last year. So my question to the Premier, the same question posed by the Finance Minister in 2001 op-ed, why, especially in these anxious times, is your government so keen to cut?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as I pointed out, the amount of money that's going into education is increasing, not decreasing. Every student in the public education system will be funded at a higher rate this year than they have in past years, Mr. Speaker. We are providing the services, ensuring that the boards who are supposed to be our partners in the delivery of these services get the funding that we need, that they need, in order to provide the services that people need.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Community Services. Under questioning last week about the protection of kids at a daycare from an alleged abuser, the Minister continuously referred to some protocol that she followed for this situation. Well, we've been asking for that protocol ever since, Mr. Speaker, and I can just share with you that we were provided with an awful lot of material just a few minutes before question period today, but nowhere in that material is anything resembling a protocol for the situation that the Minister was asked about last week. And so my question to the Minister is this: is there a real protocol that covers the situation that we asked about, or just an imaginary one?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, as I stated last week, this is a very serious and sensitive issue, and that we take the safety of our children very serious in the Department of Community Services and within this government. And the fact is that we have said over and over we took immediate action. There is a protocol. We gave the member opposite that information, and it shows what that protocol is. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the fact of the matter is that the government knew about this situation where there's an alleged abuser employed by a daycare months and months and months ago. What is unique about this situation is the government knew because it is an active participant in litigation where the alleged abuser is named in the litigation, Mr. Speaker, and the government knew that this alleged abuser is employed at a daycare. There is no protocol that says that the minister could not do the right thing and pick up the phone when she became aware and inform the daycare of the risk that they were running. And so my question is, where is it in this so-called protocol that says you can't do the right thing and call the daycare?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, as I have said before in this House, that we took immediate action. We were informed and received information on November the 15th, 2010. The very same day, we took action to contact the authorities. We contacted the Halifax Regional Police and the RCMP Integrated Major Crimes Unit. We also did an internal investigation. We checked the child abuse registry. We took every immediate action that protocol states. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it appears the Minister did everything but pick up the phone and call the daycare itself where the risk was being run. The RCMP will conduct a criminal investigation. The Department of Community Services has their own investigative powers. But common sense tells us that someone would pick up the telephone and call the daycare and let them know the risk that they were running. The fact of the matter is there is no protocol that says you can't do that. But it appears the Minister did everything but call that daycare. So my question is, will she just admit, yes or no, did she call the daycare to tell them the risk that they were running, yes or no?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I believe that the member opposite and his party should reflect on the fact that this is a serious, sensitive, and emotional situation that affects people's lives. They should not be taking this information and facts and trying to create misperceptions in the public that the daycare did not know. And I would like to table, Mr. Speaker. I would like to table three articles that clearly states that the daycare was informed of these alleged allegations over 10 years ago. That party knows that, and that party is sickening to try to turn this into a political game.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, in 2002, the Deputy Premier was very concerned about education funding by the previous Tory government and the impact it would have on students in Cape Breton. In a March 6, 2002 op-ed to the Cape Breton Post, the Deputy Premier wrote, and I quote, "If there's any will at all to build a new economy for Cape Breton, it must include a commitment to education," end quote. Mr. Speaker, since this government took office, Cape Breton Regional School Board saw several schools close, including Holy Angels High, Ashby Elementary, and Cornwallis Elementary. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister of Education tell members of this House how the Deputy Premier upheld his, quote, "commitment to education," end quote, while your government made the decision to slash public education funding and force the Cape Breton Regional School Board to close these schools?
Honourable the Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. I would like to say that I stand behind my Deputy Premier and with this government that we are making sure that our funds match the needs of our students in the province today.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, in the same Cape Breton Post op-ed from 2002, the Deputy Premier noted his concerns with the funding formula that was used. And I quote, "In a time of economic transition, our survival will depend on vision, knowledge, and skill. It will require an educational system that will equip the next generation with these tools, not a crude per capita based funding formula that will lead us to educational discrimination," end quote. In 2002, the Deputy Premier called the Hand government's per-student funding formula, the very same formula they are using today, crude and discriminatory. So my question to the Minister of Education is, did the Deputy Premier ever inform the Minister of Education that the way your government funds school boards is crude and discriminatory?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. There's two aspects of his question. I first would like to just clarify that this government changed the funding formula along with, there were 24 meetings that we had with the school boards in this province to make sure that the funding that we're providing to the school boards is allocated appropriately. So the funding formula has been changed and we're making sure that we're strategically investing in the needs of our students in this province. And I would also like to say that we are making sure that the students in this province that are interested in skilled trades are getting it. We're doubling our capacity. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this is but one more example of what the NDP said in opposition is completely opposite of what they say while they're in government. Mr. Speaker, due to the funding cuts made by the NDP government, both the Cape Breton Regional School Board and the Strait Regional School Board have been forced to announce school closures, which has caused great distress amongst teachers and amongst the communities. The Strait Regional School Board itself has voted to close three schools because of the funding changes made by this government. So my question to the Premier, would he advise us as to whether he believes that the Strait Regional School Board was simply playing games when they voted to close three schools in our board?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the boards, all the boards, are given money in order to be able to provide the services that they dictate are needed by their students. So when they make decisions on schools that are outdated or have very, very low enrollments, that's a decision that is made by the school board quite appropriately.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, the evidence speaks for itself. When it comes to justice in this province, the NDP are putting lives at risk. Even the Minister of Justice admitted in a September 2010 news release that the escalating inmate violence at the Burnside facility is not acceptable and will not be tolerated. The Minister talks a big game but has not followed through. Just days ago, a 21-year-old Burnside Jail inmate was sent to the hospital with serious head injuries following an alleged assault with a weapon. Sadly, this is not an isolated incident. Violent offenses in correctional facilities appear to be happening on a regular basis under this minister's watch. My question for the Minister of Justice, when will the minister admit that he has failed to keep staff and inmates safe in our province's correctional facilities and take real action so no more Nova Scotian lives will be put at risk?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for that question. I want to assure everyone in Nova Scotia that I take violence in any form, whether it's in an institution or in our community as a whole, and our record stands very sound on taking positive steps to change behavior. I will outline to the member, though, that the clients that are housed in those institutions are there because they have failed to follow the rules and regulations within society, and the level of violence amongst that segment of our society is higher than the general population of society. So will incidents happen in there? Certainly. But the professionalism of our staff there is second to none, and they maintain a highly qualified institution. Incidents will occur. We're saddened that this incident has occurred, and there will be incidents in the future, and we're taking all the steps to ensure the safety of each and every person.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, when in opposition to the NDP seem to have all of the answers when it comes to the management of our correctional facilities. In fact, back in 2008, Premier Dexter told reporters that problems at the Burnside facility could be boiled down to just simply a staffing shortage. So, Mr. Speaker, interestingly enough, at the same time, guards were pushing to secure a new labour agreement. In the fall of 2010, the minister announced 30 more part-time staff would be hired at the Burnside facility, but the violence, as we've seen, has continued. The minister followed the premier's advice and hired more staff, but that failed to stem the violence. So which is it? Was the premier wrong, or is the minister going to give us another excuse for his government's mismanagement at Burnside?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's no secret that I spent a lifetime on the front lines of policing and dealing with the criminal element in this province. And I want to assure you that violence occurs on a daily basis, and I respect and follow, admire the officers that are out there to do that job, as well as the correctional officer that has a very trying job to do. I find them very professional. They do the utmost to ensure the integrity of the facility to maintain safety. I want to point out to the member that this government is sensitive to those issues, take them seriously, and we have the proper resources in place, and we're in the process of building a new facility and changing some of the steps that were taken there. I do recognize, though, that coming from the third party, that where there was virtually limited policy, limited direction, and accountability, this government is accountable and taking action.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, as I mentioned earlier, the evidence speaks for itself. This minister has failed to keep Nova Scotians in our correctional facilities safe. And I don't find anything funny about this, Mr. Speaker. In fact, people who are incarcerated, while they may have committed wrong, they're entitled to reform themselves. They should be able to do that in a safe way without feeling risk for their life. So this minister has failed to keep Nova Scotians in our correctional facility safe. And in another unfortunate example, in May, a Burnside inmate was thrown down a flight of stairs during a fight with another prisoner, and he ended up on life support. Mr. Speaker, this inmate, regardless of his crimes, has family and friends who love him. My question to the minister, what does the minister have to say to the friends and families of inmates who have been seriously injured or lost their lives under his watch?
Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't think the evidence shows I think the evidence shows that there's been progressive steps made to improve the quality of service in there, the accountability, and what goes on there. What the member is failing to understand is the culture within those institutions or the life of certain segments of society. And yes, it's sad when anyone gets injured in our facilities, and I am compassionate to the families and the people that are affected by that. However, We are dealing with a very difficult segment of our society, and they're in there for a reason, and they're in there to be protected, and the public needs to be protected.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Education recently handed out orange lunch bags to primary students in four school boards in Annapolis Valley, Cape Breton Victoria School Board, Strait Regional School Board, and South Shore School Board. Mr. Speaker, these bags cost over $35 each for a grand total of $124,030.51. Speaker, parents of students with special needs are worried about their children losing education assistance due to NDP funding cuts. All the while, the Minister of Education is handing out orange lunch bags. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister of Education tell members of this House today how many education assistants a board could hire for around $124,000?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you very much for the question. The lunch bags, which is actually almost a derogatory term to what we provided for our students. What we have provided is a bag full of things for our families, of our youngest students coming to school. So when a child is coming to school in primary, they're going to receive a bag filled with tapes and books and information on parents to and crayons and scissors and construction paper, and I could go on. What we're finding is that children are coming to school not having the experience of sometimes that back and forth language development that they're having in their communities and with parents. Because, unfortunately, many of our students' children are spending too much screen time. So this was part of the succeeding in reading. That budget line was with the succeeding in reading budget line that we provided. And it took a while for us to compile that. We did it within the department. And they are in a bag that goes home to the student, which they can reuse for whatever they choose to reuse it for. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Well, it's quite ironic, Mr. Speaker, that we now have a government that's trying to tell parents how to raise their children and how to properly educate their children before they get to school. But, even better than that, Mr. Speaker, is what the Minister of Education failed to say is that the little trinkets she included in her orange bag were made in China. Just what Nova Scotia parents need is things made in China to give their children to play with before they go to school. Mr. Speaker, parents are looking for answers as to why this government feels that extra supports for students is being cut by this government. So my question to the minister, as an educator herself, will she tell members of this House how getting lunch bags full of trinkets will offset the damage done by increasing class sizes for Nova Scotia's youngest students?
Honourable the Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. It's very important that we are making sure that our children are successful. We need to make sure that children coming into school get the supports that they need so that they can be successful as they move through our system. We recognize that our literacy levels needed to have some improvement, and the department worked very carefully with all of the school boards in this province to see where we could make sure children can be successful. So this is a part of succeeding in reading to put literacy in the hands of our youngest children when they come to school. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and maybe the Minister will be kind enough to table in this House correspondence from the school boards that actually ask for the orange lunch bag to be sent to children coming into their boards. Mr. Speaker, school boards are laughing at the orange lunch bags in case the minister is not aware. Mr. Speaker, thanks to this government, boards are being forced to close schools to reach budget targets. Communities feel that the review process is biased to close schools because boards simply cannot afford to keep them open. Two reviews in the Strait Regional School Board are under judicial review. Parents and communities are worried about losing schools and having young children spending additional time on school buses. Mr. Speaker, the minister slashed education funding, boards are being forced to close schools, teachers are being laid off, Class sizes are growing, school supports are being lost, and the minister is handing out orange lunch bags. So my question is, will the Minister of Education stand up to the Premier and Minister of Finance and demand that cuts to public education stop?
Honourable the Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. Our student funding is increasing. We have the lowest class sizes in the history of this province. We are strategically investing. Our Kids and Learning First plan makes sure that we are providing the services that our children need to be successful. We are making sure that we have skills trades available in our school, that we have the ability for students to get a credit outside of the school system in an area that they're interested in. Kids and Learning First is a plan for every child in this province to succeed. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Mr. Speaker, last week in AllNovaScotia.com, we learned that the Labour Department has seven union certification applications. It's only a matter of time, Mr. Speaker. Propeller Brewing Company is just one of those seven that's facing unionization, most likely as a result of this government's risky new labour law. Mr. Speaker, Propeller is one of those local Nova Scotia success stories. For the last 6 or 7 years, Mr. Speaker, Propeller has been growing by between 15 and 20% a year. But because of the NDP, Mr. Speaker, Propeller could have a third party force unpredictable labour costs upon it and harm its ability to grow and compete successfully with the Nova Scotia product. So my question to you, to the Minister, Mr. Speaker, will the Minister admit that the government should be helping business propel themselves forward instead of giving them the shaft?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to remind the members of this chamber that the right to unionize and to begin collective bargaining is guaranteed under federal legislation. And certainly, we recognize that having a stable labor relations climate in this province is very critical to building productivity and also building the prosperity of our province. There have been seven applications to the Labour Board for certification. Some of those began before the first contract legislation was implemented, which was, I think, January the 21st. None of those to date have been granted. As I said, they're still in process. And it's my understanding that there have been no applications to the Labour Board or to the Department for any of the first contract privileges or benefits. So that no one has asked for that yet. It's not it's not been actioned, and certainly when information is available on that, we'll be able to provide it to the House. But there has been no flurry of applications. This is the ordinary number of applications to the Labour Board for certification. It's part of the normal business in this province. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria Lakes on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the right to unionize has been there for 100 years. All this government has done with its first contract arbitration is just make it a lot easier. That's all. Mr. Speaker, small business owners in Nova Scotia are barely able to keep their head afloat. They make incredible sacrifices and bear extreme financial risk just to live out their passion and employ a few deserving people. Mr. Speaker, Propeller's owner, when asked by AllNovaScotia.com about whether or not he's a wealthy man, said, and I quote, "I drive a 2001 Suzuki Esteem. We call it the low self-esteem." Mr. Speaker, I bet you the Premier's right-hand Labour friend, Rick Clark, has pretty high self-esteem these days. Oh, yeah. Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister is, who does she side with? An employer trying to provide meaningful jobs to local families or her government's special interest Labour friends?
The Honourable Minister of Labor and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm proud to say that this government respects the laws of the country and respects due process, and that's what we're enforcing. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes on his final supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, it's a good thing Propeller is now bidding for contracts from shipbuilding. They'd be facing uncertain costs at the worst possible time because they would have an expensive contract forced on them by NDP job-killing legislation. So that we don't run the risk of blowing the opportunity from the shipbuilding contract, Mr. Speaker, the NDP should be helping Nova Scotia businesses compete against other places. So my final supplementary to the Minister, Mr. Speaker, is when will she commit to rip up her job-killing legislation and give Nova Scotia businesses a fighting chance to compete?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I have said on the floor of this chamber many, many times, first contract legislation is actually to provide more stability, especially when an employer is faced for the first time with a unionized workplace. And it gives every possible support to both the union and to the employer to negotiate according to our collective bargaining process here in the province. And if it runs into any difficulties, then we have additional supports that we can bring into place. This is helping business in this province. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The government's 2012-13 budget target parameters stated that the review of the school board funding formula, known as the HOG formula, had been approved and would be implemented with this budget. So my question to the Minister of Education is this. Do the changes in the funding formula take into account declining enrollment?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
I'm going to be up for estimates, Mr. Speaker, and I'm sure that a number of those questions can be asked of me at that time. But the formula, the HOG formula, is based, it's a tool to allocate the money. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Well,
I
would take that the minister doesn't know, but perhaps she will be by the time estimate somebody will tell her. So, Mr. Speaker, prior to changes in the formula, as the minister should know, declining enrollments were addressed and funding responded to enrollment figures from each board. So my question to the minister, how are those declining enrollments now accommodated in the new formula?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We have had 24 meetings with the school boards. All the school boards in the province were consulted. The funding formula is a tool that is used to make sure that the funds are allocated appropriately to our school boards. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her final supplementary.
Well, I guess it would be three strikes, you're out. No answer to the first one, no answer to the second one, so we'll try the third one. Mr. Speaker, this is obviously not working, and the minister is forcing boards to further cut teaching positions because the formula apparently does not address declining enrollment. With the implementation of the formula, for example, Chignecto Central is supposed to be reduced by 18 FTEs. In order to balance the books, they had to be reduced by 51.6 teaching FTEs. The South Shore Board funding formula would translate into a loss of 5 teachers. But again, in order to balance the books, they have had to add another 15 reductions for a total of 20. So my question to the minister, why has the minister accepted and started to use a funding formula model that obviously does not adequately address declining enrollment?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
I guess, Mr. Speaker, I will try to answer this by saying that the budget actually is based on our enrollment in the students in the province of Nova Scotia. We know that we are in a declining enrollment for next year, 1.7, and we made sure that our target is 1.3 to accommodate the fixed costs that school board has. The budget target is actually the part of the addressing the declining enrollment. The tool to allocate the money is the formula. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, NASCAD is a world-renowned institution and the only fine arts institution that we have here in the province. However, its future is in question. As a result of the Windsor report that's come out, NASCAD has been asked to put forward a business plan to this province, yet we haven't heard a response from this government as a result of that business plan. My question to the Minister of Advanced Education is, when can the folks at NASCAD expect a response, and what is this government's intention when it comes to the future of NASCAD in the province of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I received the report at the end of March. My officials are analyzing the information in it, and I expect to be able to respond to NASCAD within a matter of weeks. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the answer to the question. However, there was another report that was done earlier, titled the Hogg Formula. This report was actually buried by the government, and its information wasn't released until someone did a Freedom of Information request on it. In this report, they highlighted the fact that it's actually the funding formula to our post-secondary institutions that put NASCAD at a financial disadvantage. My question to the minister is, why was that report buried in the government, buried with this government and not acted upon?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Hogg was invited to analyze the financial situation of NASCAD, and he reported back in 2010. It was sort of a snapshot in time of their financial situation. The Hogg report was one of a number of reports that government used to realize the severity of the financial challenges facing that institution. And because of our commitment to fine arts programming in this province, we took all the information from the reports very, very seriously, and we wanted to work with NASCAD to make sure that it was sustainable into the future. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the problem is that first report wasn't taken seriously. The report that highlighted the fact that the way NASCAD is funded through the province puts it at a financial disadvantage. However, the next report, which put all the blame on NASCAD's administration, was acted upon. So my question to the minister, is there an agenda here to close NASCAD University and an agenda against our arts community?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the contrary, this government has invested $6 million extra to NASCAD for funding over the last 3 years because we value the excellence of programming in that institution, and we are giving them time to work out a sustainability plan so that they continue well into the future. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, after an 8-month delay, this government released their watered-down, inadequate natural resources strategy. A FOIPOP obtained by a media outlet showed that the minister acted like a dentist, and he removed the teeth from this strategy. He deleted the chapter that required external reviews of the program. He deleted the section clarifying which departments are responsible for which resources. And he deleted the section requiring management plans for woodlands used in energy production. Mr. Speaker, my question for the minister is this. If the minister was serious about producing a strategy to transform the way Nova Scotia's natural resources are managed, why did he reduce it to just a puff piece?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not quite clear what the minister, the honourable member, is asking, but it's right. We released our natural resources strategy on August 16th of last summer, And we've been working very hard within the department to meet a number of goals. And, one of them in the forestry sector is to reduce our clear-cutting to 50% within 5 years. We're well on our way to that target. We're working with industry and non-governmental organizations and woodlot owners and Nova Scotians in general. We're working hard on our biomass practice within the Code of Forest Practice. We're working on mineral resources and parks review and biodiversity, a number of good initiatives that are all underway at this point in time.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, by removing these sections, actually the Minister did a clear-cutting of his own strategy. This minister has produced an all-sizzle and no-stake document that does little to provide answers to Nova Scotians. He is failing in his obligation to provide real leadership to a sector that is vital to our province's future. My question to the minister is this. Will the minister admit that his do-nothing strategy and that his natural resources plan for 2012 is to say precious little about what this province needs to do?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wonder who writes these questions for the Honourable Member, but we've been working on a number of positive initiatives in forestry, in biodiversity, in parks, and in geological resources. For example, in forestry, we've had a number of good initiatives on the ground in eastern Nova Scotia, as the member may be aware, in Guysborough and Pictou and Antigonish counties, as well as in Cape Breton, working directly with the forest contractors, working directly with the harvesters to find new ways of doing forestry in this province based around getting away from clear-cutting and looking a lot more at Category 7 types of initiatives, more silviculture, more long-term investment in the future of our forestry. So as I mentioned, there's a lot of good initiatives. I'd be willing to sit down with the member and detail all of those if the member has time.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his final supplementary.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians have been waiting for more than 15 months for a technical definition of clear-cutting. The NDP clearly has something to hide with this strategy. They took all the teeth out of it, and businesses are suffering as a result. Hodgins Chipping of Truro has been supplying wood chips to Northern Pulp. In February, it announced it was closing down because this government failed to provide clear-cut regulations. My question to the minister is this. How many other companies does the minister and his government plan to force out of business before coming up with a real answer?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Under previous governments, all we got was clear-cut, clear-cut, clear-cut. 96% of our woodlands was being clear-cut. That's unacceptable. Nova Scotians have told us so. It's not right. So, Mr. Speaker, we have a plan. We have an initiative. It's called our Natural Resources Strategy 2011-2020, and it's a way to get away from clear-cutting and get onto a more sustainable forestry in this province.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Mr. Speaker, last week Nova Scotians learned of changes to the ACT program at the IWK, changes structured to reduce wait times for those needing evaluation by reducing treatment programs for children and adolescents. Seems like these aren't the only changes, Mr. Speaker. Capital Health is discontinuing its Compass program for adults on July 1st, 2012. So come this date, there will be no inpatient structured treatment for adults with addictions within Capital District. My question to the Minister of Health and Wellness, why are Nova Scotians seeing such drastic changes to mental health and addiction programs when we have yet to see a province-wide mental health and addiction strategy?
Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, mental health services are extremely important services to people in our province. And for too long, too many people have suffered because they have not been able to get access to the services because services were focused more on inpatient than day programs. We are changing the model of service delivery to ensure that more people will be seen earlier, both children adolescents and adults so they get the treatment they need at an earlier opportunity. The results tend to be much better. It's a better use of our health care dollars, and we will see a much stronger mental health system as a result of these changes, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his first supplementary.
Speaker, like last week, we see changes happening in programs in order to put additional resources in other areas without any evidence showing that the programs being sacrificed do not play a valuable role in the continuum of supports in the first place. Instead of providing additional resources on the community end for treatment, we find the financial resources for investment by dismantling other services. And, Mr. Speaker, the minister knows full well this is wrong. How does the minister intend to deal with increased wait lists for adults deemed by other healthcare professionals as requiring more structured treatment for addictions when all of our provincial capacity is disappearing down to one program in Middleton?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I know the Honourable Member and I will have an opportunity to get into the details of new expenditures in the budget. Mr. Speaker, there are an additional approximately $4 million of new investment in our budget for mental health and addiction services. The mental health and addiction strategy is expected later on this spring, Mr. Speaker, and we will see targeted intervention to improve a variety of mental health and addiction services across our province as a result of this work, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, when the Compass program in Capital District closes, it will leave one residential structured treatment program in the province, as I said earlier, the 21-day program in Middleton. With the closure of Talbot House, which offered residential treatment of even longer duration than Compass, we are rapidly losing capacity.
Order, please. Order. The time has run out for oral questions put by members to ministers. I will now call upon the Honourable Government Host Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, could you please call a reply to the budget speech, please?
Reply to the budget speech. Before we do that, I'd like to call upon the Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on an introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just very briefly, I would like to welcome to the House of Assembly today Mr. Todd Graham, who is the operator of Mackenzie College and a prominent member of the Sydney business community. And I encourage you, sir, and all members to welcome Mr. Graham to the House of Assembly in our proceedings today.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park.
Well, thank you very much.